Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:26 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is February 1st. Well, January was a spectacular month in terms of stock market performance, and so far in February, we're seeing a continuation of that trend. In China this morning, the market was a little bit easier. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong was down by about 0.25%. The ASX was down about 0.9%, just a bit less than that. The Nikkei was relatively unchanged on the day. The Nikkei is rather interesting. It's held the majority of its advance. It's been weaker in the last couple of days, but it's held the majority of its advance in the face of really quite concerted yen strength over the last couple of days. Now, the yen was as low as 76.03 today, and it closed out the day at 76.2. 76 has been a relatively important level for the yen versus the dollar over the last 9 or 10 months. The Bank of Japan has intervened on three separate occasions when the yen has strengthened past 76, and nothing has really occurred to suggest that they won't continue to do that if the yen continues to strengthen. So we're down here at a very interesting level. In the rest of Asia, the majority of markets were really quite firm. India in particular followed through on yesterday's impressive bounce back. The banking sector continues to lead, as does the auto sector, and it looks increasingly likely that the Indian market has bottomed in here. It looks like it's in the process of breaking a year-long downtrend. If it can sustain a move above the 200-day moving average, that will confirm that contention. The majority of markets in Europe were in positive territory by about 2%. The FTSE a little bit less than that. The Swiss market was up about 1 2/3%. The U.S. market, Dow Jones, finished up about 0.2%. The S&P by about 0.9%. The Nasdaq 100 extended its breakout from a more than year-long range. The Nasdaq is really rather remarkable because it is the third market to have broken upwards to new high ground. It's the first really big cap market to have done so. And it's being led higher by one of the most successful companies in the world. But there are three main sectors that are leading the Nasdaq higher, and those are cloud computing and consumer electronics, and Apple certainly represents those. Then the biotechnology and healthcare sector, which has an incredible amount of commonality, where you see a number of large cap shares in really quite consistent uptrends, and mid to smaller cap shares breaking out of almost decade-long bases over the last year. So the commonality there does suggest that the healthcare sector is where there is a really important story developing. You're also seeing that consumer-led shares, those that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer, and those at the other extreme that are leveraged to the compression of the middle class in the USA, are also relative and absolute outperformers on the Nasdaq. Brazil is also notable today, as is much of Latin America. Brazil was stronger by over 2%. It's powered through the 60,000 area, and 60,000 was an important psychological Rubicon for Brazil, because it represented the lower side of the overhead top formation. It's pushed through that. It's pushed through it far enough now so that it can easily consolidate above that area and still be within a consistent 4 to 5 month uptrend. It looks increasingly likely that the market is going to go on and test the highs and potentially move on to new high ground over the medium term. Now, the change of government policy in December has been a bullish catalyst for Brazil. They removed the IOF tax on foreigners and foreign deposits, and they've been lowering taxes generally, and they've been talking about lowering interest rates. So the government is doing everything that it can to bolster economic growth, and that has certainly helped to encourage investor participation in that market. There's a high degree of commonality right across the Latin American region. You're also seeing that Latin American currencies are appreciating in line with Asian currencies. What we're seeing across central banks is that just about all central banks at this stage are in they've reversed their tightening bias. An increasing number are adopting quantitative easing. Asian markets are, an increasing number of Asian currencies are lowering interest rates. The ECB has, under Mario Draghi, has engaged in quantitative easing. It's become the lender of last resort. It's refinancing the financial sector through the sovereign yield curve, and or through the sovereign rating curve, I think is probably a more accurate description. What it's done is it has lowered the collateral requirements. It's made an incredible amount of money available. It has then allowed banks to post as collateral somewhat lower rated debt, take out AAA rated debt, or take out AAA rated loans. That allows the banks to go out and buy more lower rated instruments and post them as collateral again at the ECB. So the ECB's balance sheet is exploding higher. It's the same situation for the vast majority of other central banks. That's creating an incredible amount of liquidity, and that liquidity is finding its way into productive assets. What people term as risk on, risk off, though this would be a risk on type of environment. Now, there is a note of caution, because we've seen that a number of markets have been rallying for at least 4 consecutive weeks, and some of them almost 6 consecutive weeks. So there are short-term overbought conditions developing. There is still the likelihood that some of these markets pause and unwind the short-term overbought condition. But even in that scenario, this remains a cyclical bull market. We've been of that opinion since October. And what we really need to see to question that is breaks and progressions of higher reaction lows that have been evident since October. And there's not any sign of that. We're actually seeing that an increasing number of markets are actually breaking upwards to new high ground. Commodities have also reflected the increased bullish perceptions out there, particularly the industrial metal complex, with US manufacturing and Chinese manufacturing coming in ahead of expectations. That's helped to bolster interest in the commodity complex. Copper has been leading higher. It's at $3.83 as I speak. The peak is not that much above $4. So it's only 20 cents away from its previous peak. This has been a remarkable performance relative to the other industrial metals, and copper is actually performing more like an equity market than some of those other industrial metals, which did get hit particularly hard, but also show signs that they found support and they're breaking out of bases, or they've been holding progressions of higher reaction lows. They do all look like they're going to go higher in this environment. Something that a subscriber pointed out to me today was that the yield on extremely short-dated US paper has begun to rise. A 90-day paper or 3-month paper has yields have begun to rise, and that does suggest that we are seeing a move away from the extraordinarily cautious attitude that investors have had. And they're beginning to think about either getting some yield on their investments or capital appreciation, or in the case of a number of investments, both. So we've had an extraordinarily volatile second half of 2011. Sentiment was at an extraordinarily low ebb, and we are now starting to see that central banks have moved into high gear in terms of restoring confidence. That's helping to support asset markets in this environment. We've had a deterioration in the US dollar, particularly against Asian and Latin American currencies, and the euro has had a pretty good rally over the last couple of weeks. It was deeply oversold. It's at least unwound part of that oversold condition. It remains to be seen just how well the fiscal compact is absorbed by the markets. One important point is that it tends to assume that the majority of the blame for the Eurozone crisis rests with sovereigns. And that might be the case in Greece, where the tax collecting network is abysmally bad, and the government has really done an incredibly bad job in terms of managing the economy. But it doesn't really apply to Spain, where the regional banks lent an incredible amount of money to spawn a property bubble, and where now the sovereign has had to step in and absorb those debts. It's the same story in Ireland, where the debt-to-GDP ratio prior to the crisis was really quite low, and the sovereign has had to absorb an incredible amount of bank debt. The fiscal compact doesn't mention the banking sector. There will have to be additional reform of the financial sector once it's been recapitalized. The ECB is actively engaged in recapitalizing the European banking sector, and once that's been achieved, there's going to have to be substantial reform to ensure that this type of crisis doesn't happen again, and that sovereigns won't have to intervene in a similar type of situation a couple of decades or even a decade from now. So there's certainly good and bad to this European treaty. The oil market is also noteworthy in here today because West Texas Intermediate was weaker by a dollar. It's down to 97.41, whereas Brent crude was stronger by 87 cents. So we're starting to see that spread between the two benchmark oil contracts is starting to widen out once more. I'm not entirely sure what the reason for that is, but Brent crude is the primary global benchmark for crude oil, and it's still far too steady. It's been holding here in the region of $111 to $112 for a while now. This is the region of the 200-day moving average. A sustained move above $115 would reassert the medium-term uptrend, and it's not that far off it. So that is the potential threat to the cyclical bull market, which would be a spike in crude oil prices. And that means that we do have to keep an eye on what oil prices are doing, because they are the one thing that could really throw a spanner in the works in terms of the expansion that is starting to get underway, being fueled by the incredible amount of money that's being created by various central banks. The more liquidity we have, the greater the performance is going to be on some of these risk assets. Gold has performed very well in the last few months. It found support in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's pushed right back up towards the $1,750 area. Touched that area earlier on today. The other precious metals also look like they're on a recovery footing, but they're overbought in the very short term. Commodities, we've had a mantra at Fuller Money since at least 2003, never pay up for commodities. They're a bit overbought in the short term. They could do with a bit of consolidation, but they do look like they're on a recovery footing. Gold continues to reflect both the aspirations of the newly wealthy, but also it is a store of value for those that are appalled by the way that fiat currencies are being abused by various central banks. And it continues to look like it's going to be able to sustain a move to new high ground at some point this year. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.